We hear it often. We're in the information age. The amount of information out there is growing and growing. Thanks to wireless technology, smartphones, and social media tools such as Twitter, a lot of people can produce and access a lot of information at any time of the day. But where do we find the time to keep up with all that information? Do we need to? How do we determine what information we need? We only have so much cognitive ability to store, process, and interpret information. What happens when we reach our maximum limit and experience information overload? Social justice activists are committed to enacting positive social change through a variety of avenues and strategies. Information, ideas, and education are central to almost all social movements. How are social activists dealing with information overload? I spoke to two social activists to find out their thoughts on this issue. I spoke to each of them about how they manage information and information overload in their day-to-day life. On the phone with us, we have Itrath Zayed. She's a community activist and PhD candidate in the School of Communication at SFU, and she's going to share a little bit about her experiences in her information landscape and with information overload. Thanks for speaking with us.
Thanks, Emily.
So just give us a little picture of your information landscape. What kind of information do you access regularly and from where?
Well, first thing I do generally in the morning, as soon as I emerge, is I go to my BBC app on my iPad and find out what's happened in the last 12 hours in the world.
So that's how you get your news?
That's how I get my news, mostly. And then I do watch news on television, and if I'm in the car, on CBC Radio. But generally, like, through the BBC app is probably the first place I go for, like, news.
How else do you engage with information on a daily basis?
Well, I have an email account and several email accounts that sort of do different purposes, and I'm on a lot of different discussion lists and a lot of a newsletter list for different organizations and activist groups, etc. So I get a lot of information that way, and that probably is it used to be a much more efficient way for me to be connected, but because there's just so much of it now, is actually the least likely way that I'll actually hear about things, because it tends to just get accumulated in its respective folders, and it can be a long time, if ever, that I actually go through it.
Mm. So your way of managing information has changed with the introduction of new forms of media?
Even though I'm not really accessing all the possible ways of networking and communication, I still feel very overwhelmed by it all of the time. So I don't have a Facebook page, I don't have a Twitter account, and obviously don't follow anyone on Twitter. And even though there's a few blogs that I check out, periodically, but I don't sort of, I'm not connected in that way the way many people are these days. But even cutting out all of that possible information, I still feel constantly overwhelmed.
Can you tell me more about that feeling of overwhelm? Like, when do you get that feeling, or what do you think that it's about?
Well, there's just so much to know. There's just too much information, and there's not more hours in the day. And given all that one has to do, it always feels like you're never quite up to date. And so one of the things that I dread doing sometimes is in the morning opening up my email program and seeing the various folders that are, like, with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of unread messages in them.
Yes, I'm getting overwhelmed by even telling me that.
It is. But every once in a while, the only thing that I can do is, like, at the end of a term or at the end of some kind of deadline cycle, I just go in and I just flush the entire folder, because there's no way that I'm going to read that.
Right. So you were saying how you don't engage in certain social media platforms as a way almost to preempt from feeling even more overwhelmed.
Right. I mean, I just don't actually know when the time would be. And also, I think one of the things that I find is that if you're constantly connected, it's really hard to find the important information from the unimportant information, because you're constantly getting a stream of information. So, like, I feel like that's I'm already feeling like that, but I think that if I was connected to multiple Twitter feeds and was, you know, had multiple Facebook friends who were constantly updating their sites and I was getting notifications of that, how do you tell the difference between someone put up their breakfast picture and someone's mother just died? Isn't it all just part of an unending stream that you can't ever manage?
Well, and how does this relate to being a PhD student?
Well, part of it is that I also teach, and so recently this semester actually I'm TAing for a course that is using a new online an online system for managing the course material. So students are uploading their papers, we're marking them online, and when students try to contact me through that site, through like uploading a comment, because I'm one of the TAs, so the prof and the TAs get notified every time a student does anything in the site, and there's like several hundred people in this class. So every day I get a stream of notifications, most of whom are not from my particular students. So I never can keep up with that. I never know. And if there's something urgent, there's just no way for me to have actually seen that message.
Right. So you're trying to differentiate between, figuring out ways to differentiate between like what you really, really need to know and then what's the sort of noise in the background.
And I think that part of the problem is that we are living in a time where everybody feels compelled to create more noise because that's the only way that we sort of, you know, say, oh, look, we were here. And so there's a lot of noise being created. There's a lot of inane information being circulated in different forms by everybody all of the time. I don't think it actually makes us feel more of a sense of community. At least it hasn't had that effect on my life in any way. But it does make me feel more overwhelmed. And it makes me feel more, like it makes me feel less connected to people because it is indistinguishable.
See, I'm curious when I asked you about being a PhD candidate, I'm also curious about the fact that, I mean, you need to be reading things that are not coming to you sort of let through Twitter and...
Right. Even though I am in studying media, the academic thinking cycle is not in immediate form, right? It also doesn't narrow itself down to 140 characters easily. So it's like often the stuff I'm thinking about now, you know, I'm thinking about, like, it takes a while for something that's happening right now to go through the entire process of an academic sort of the theorization of something, then the writing of something, then the publication of something. Mm-hmm. It's a different time cycle.
But do you think that time cycle is also speeding up?
So I think in some respects it is speeding up in that people publish online, but there's also a lot of pressure on academics, right? So a lot of sort of the more prominent academics whose academic work I really benefit from and am indebted to, they also are writing blogs and they have a Twitter feed and they maintain a Facebook page but there's no more hours in the day, right? There's still the same amount of hours in a day. And there's a lot of pressure to constantly maintain this high-end public presence and to comment on everything all the time, which is, again, not sort of the best thing, the most conducive thing to sort of an academic process of thinking something through slowly and working it out and trying to figure out the different implications or consequences of something. The need to constantly be immediately responding is, I don't think that's a great idea.
It's interesting. There's so many levels to that, because when I asked you about your PhD, you started talking about the demands of teaching and needing to keep up with that information flow. When I was originally thinking about, you know, creating the time to think and reading longer texts and books, and how to balance that with needing to keep up with what's current, particularly if you're studying media or...
Right. That's constantly a battle, right? During the last year or so when I was studying for my exams, part of the only way to make that process possible was to actually shut down even further, to actually have very little contact, to not follow something in the immediacy so that I could actually do the work that I needed to do.
And now the other thing I'm curious about is social activism pieces, or feeling like engaged in some way with, you know, social issues, whether it's writing about it or engaging with it somehow. How do you think your relationship to you know, your information landscape or the issues of information overload you're describing relate to your feelings of engagement with social activism?
Well, I feel like that's changed because the nature of social activism has completely changed, in the very recent past. When I was much more active than I am now, there were activist organizations, there was meetings that people went to, there was rallies that people organized, there was a different sort of a rhythm to that. But now, when it seems to me that social activism, if you want to hear about something, sometimes I actually have to ask one of my friends who has a Facebook account to find something. Because I don't have a Facebook account, a lot of things only sort of exist in the ether on a Facebook account. There is a disconnect that I feel because of the way and the nature of the way activism seems to be being organized now. Just even finding out about things can be difficult, but I don't think it is possible anymore because the way the format of what activism looks like now is to establish a Facebook presence, is to like something, and regardless of like the efficacy of how that works or the power of that, like that's a separate discussion, but it actually pulls you into a certain way of relating to information.
Mm-hmm. I definitely feel that as well.
I think part of it is that there's this, people are always shocked and get actually visibly, like have an affective response, get visibly angered when I say that I'm not on Facebook. It makes people uncomfortable to just say that because they want, in a conversation, they're like, but you have so many opinions. Why are you not on Facebook? Why are you not sharing things all of the time?
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a real insistence that the only way to think something now is to exhibit it. You can't actually just have a thought for a second before it's, deposited in public sphere.
Yeah, that is the sort of, instead of just sort of the receiving of so much information, it's the way that we engage with it. So needing to produce and express and put out information in particular context and kind of constantly. I mean, producing a radio program used to produce the radio program and then go home. And then you started podcasting it. And now you need to have a Twitter account and a Facebook account to, like, it becomes a whole...
Right, and then you have to respond to the comments underneath the podcast.
Yeah, and then you need to have time to eat dinner.
Right, and just actually live and have any kind of human contact. And certainly with the workload of, like, studying for academic exams or just trying to finish a degree, it's just not conducive to this constant being dragged into the immediacy of everything.
I guess my other question, the one that I also struggle with, is my main context is producing a radio program. So in some ways, the kind of information I produce, like news, for example, I mean, it was... I found, like, I got a little disillusioned feeling like I'm just contributing to the information overwhelm. I'm just adding more to this big, ever exponentially expanding pit of information. And is that enacting social change? Because historically I felt like, well, what we need to do is let people know. We need to educate people. We need to get the word out about what's going on. And I do believe that also now, but I feel like it's changed so much that I can't even really get a grasp on the landscape enough to figure out how to engage with it, if that makes any sense.
I guess it was in the late 1990s when I sort of first, got involved in email discussion groups and sort of being connected. It was very powerful. It was a very useful tool for me to sort of get out of, like, a provincial, contact and be able to connect with transnational activists working in different fields that I was thinking about, and it was really important, it was really positive. But those same avenues that were really useful now have become not useful for me, because now instead of being like something I could do for an hour a day to, like, connect with people and feel solidarity across borders and across contexts, now it's like being hit with a fire hose all day, every day. Like, you can't, it's just too much information, and there's just too much out there, so that I feel less connected to it, because there's just no way that I could follow every conversation, there's no way that I could follow every issue that I care about. It's just too much.
It does definitely force us to focus ourselves in a different way, I think. And we need to have some kind of discipline, I think, to get ourselves through this. For example, you're, you know, working on a PhD, so you need to, at some point, turn off that, have some kind of management tool to enable for you to focus, to finish, and focus on the project.
And of course, it does, like, within that, it's too much, I can't see it, the different email lists or the different newsletters that I'm on, kind of, with really critical, you know, political information, I have a system on my email program, like labeled folders, and as I download my various email accounts, they flip directly into those folders, and then those folders just, they show me the number, and it's like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds. Like currently, there's probably over 4,000 emails in my email program that are unread easily, and so when that happens, there's always, after a while, I find out that, oh, something very important is happening that people are organizing around, and I've missed it because mm-hmm. it's buried in this mountain.
Mm-hmm. And so what, looking forward, what do you feel like, you know, for yourself or for social movements is coming up in terms of this issue of information management and information overload? Do you have any thoughts on that?
I think that what's happened to me practically is that my engagement with ideas has shifted and changed, because now my engagement with social movements, social justice classes, takes more the form of, like, writing about it and teaching about it, because I just can't maintain the schedule of what it takes to be a frontline activist now. Mm. There's just not that many hours in the day, and it's almost like I would have to choose. I don't think there's time to do both. And the thing is, it's not that there isn't a desire to do both. There's, logistically, in the material world, there's just not the human possibility to engage with all the information, be responding to everything in the moment, and also thinking through complex political theory for hours a day. There's not enough human capacity for that. I wonder how this is going to develop in the future.
Yeah.
Whether all of this information is just, like, I don't actually know what's going to happen for people who are, say, younger than me and who are sort of engaging in or just beginning a process of politicization. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what that looks like for them, and I don't know what that will mean for them.
Well, it'd be interesting to kind of see where things continue to go with this.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Well, thanks so much for sharing your thoughts and reflecting on this issue.
Sure. Thanks, Emily.
That was Itra Syed. She's a community activist and PhD candidate in the School of Communication at SFU. We're talking about information overload and social movements. How are social activists dealing with information overload? Has the amount of information today changed the way in which social activism is done? To explore some of these questions, I also spoke with Caitlin Dodd. Caitlin Dodd is a TV editor and videographer. She acts in and produces videos that work to educate, challenge, and engage people on a variety of social issues. So thanks for speaking to me on this issue, Caitlin.
Oh, thanks for having me, Emily.
Do you feel like you or others around you experience information overload?
I would say yes. I definitely, in cycles of maybe waves or sometimes days, experience information overload. I sit at a desk, or I stand at a desk, fortunately, but I'm at a desk 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, and because of that, I'm in front of many screens and access to lots and lots and lots of online this is and that. And so there are definitely cycles in which sometimes I feel like, okay, that's enough, that's a good amount that I can feed back into my work, and then there gets to be a sort of saturation point where there's too much and I need to take a step back and be in my body and be away from the screens.
You work on a number of different video projects, both at your work and in your spare time. Can you tell us a little bit about what kind of projects those are and what kind of issues you cover in the videos you work on, act in, and make?
I'm a television editor and producer, and I work on a show called The Sustainable Region, which is a show produced by the region of Metro Vancouver, and it has to do with their areas of expertise, so drinking water, waste management, wastewater treatment, and regional parks. So that's what I do in my 9-to-5, with my 9-to-5 hat. And when I have the time, and my friends also have the time, I also work on a satire, an online satire called Deprogram, where we try to bring a little lightheartedness and humor to Canadian politics.
So tell us about what you're trying to do in the videos that you make and how this relates to any experiences you have of information overload.
In the videos that I make for work, it largely has to do with issues regarding sustainability and our regional district. So with those videos, it has a lot to do with this idea of behavior change, and so not trying to tell people what they should do. It sounds sort of manipulative, but we try and not be manipulative. We just try and encourage positive change amongst communities so that they can do things like start to use the green bin a little bit more frequently or be a little bit more mindful of the excellent access we have to fresh drinking water and stuff like that. So in those videos, it's a pretty rote script. For the most part, we take the regional initiatives that Metro Vancouver has set out, and we work around those. So there's a nice sort of tight line of possible scripts that we work from. So that's kind of, I don't have to go into that world of over-mediated internet pop culture to get ideas or inspiration for that, although it is possible, definitely, at times. But for the most part, it's within a world that's sort of self-contained.
I think you've pointed on something where people try to keep up with the way people are receiving information in their messaging. So whether it's trying to, like you say, pop cultures or quick sound bites, because that's how people are receiving information. Because you have to kind of be aware of the information landscape as you're trying to send out messages into it, right?
Oh, entirely. And that sort of speaks to the other work that I do that I don't consider work because I just love it so much. That's the satire and the more fun stuff. And in those pieces, we're trying to, I mean, with the people that I'm lucky enough to collaborate with, they and myself as well, we have found ourselves often maybe not overloaded with digital information, but overloaded with the truth of our current political landscape in Canada. And so we try and figure out ways to tell stories that not only inform, but maybe give people a little bit of lightness in their day, a little bit of, because it can be very, especially with the circus, the way it is right now with Parliament and municipalities in Canada, it can be very overwhelming to look at that and look it right in the eyes and say, like, whoa, is this our democracy? So in using humor and video, which is, you know, we have access to it, we can do it cheaply, we can turn out pieces quickly if we have the energy to do so, we can invert some of the wave of an overabundance of information and send it back and try and bring a little bit more energy to people's days and make them laugh and make them think. So what we're trying to achieve with those videos is there's this idea of an imagined community that is old, you know, media literacy concept about the people. It's not media literacy, but it feeds into it. There are people that we are connected to in this country that we have never met and we may never meet, but in telling stories about the things that we share, like our democracy, we can create a sense of a community, an imagined community. And so with video, there's this possibility of reaching out to those people that maybe are hooked up online to give them a sense of connection when these larger issues can feel very overwhelming. And in order to do that, we often, like a lot of the time, we take pop sound bites, we take artifacts of a pop culture and celebrity culture and strip them of their vacuousness, or we try to. We take the shell of that structure, of that little, like, music video or something like that, and then we infuse it with our own content and our own writing so that people, audiences, can sit down and say, like, I recognize part of this, so I'll give it the time of day, And then there's something surprising. There's a joke. There's something about Canadian politics. There's something about climate change. And so we're hoping that in doing that, in subverting those popular structures, we are able to create pieces that people might be able to take in but not consume passively.
So how do you feel like the amount of information that people are receiving and information overload and the way people are receiving information affect your strategy with producing and disseminating those videos as well as the content of those videos?
That's a really good question. And you can get into very specific strategies in terms of video that I have never, because I do a lot of editing, I'm not on the distribution side of things as much as my friends or my co-collaborators at work. But, you know, it's like, it comes down to the nit and grit of time of day and day of the week and, you know, the length of write-up you put in an email before sending something along to people, or if you maybe try and contact some people that have a blog reel that they might be willing to put your piece up on. So you sort of have that kind of network in place and those ideas in place before you release a video. But again, it's like, it's a bit of a crapshoot. So if you're looking towards just getting some number of eyes watching a piece, it's very hard to predict.
We're all receiving so many messages and so many forms every day.
Yeah.
And as people trying to enact positive change in the world, we're trying to put out positive messages to counter some of those, you know, corporate messages, consumer messages, political messages that we don't feel are enacting positive change. So we want to get our word in there. We want to get our voice in there. But how do we do that in a way that is, you know, first of all, not contributing to information overload, but also taking the, like, vast sort of sphere of how much information's out there and engaging in a way that is, that feels, you know, true to values and feels productive. 'Cause I think I've struggled with just when I do some work, I feel like, am I just adding to people's overwhelm? Am I just adding to people's sense of, oh my gosh, the world's just overwhelming and I don't want to do anything because it's kind of depressing and it's just too much information. I'm just going to shut off. And I think that's some people's response to feeling like they have too much information.
Right.
So I'm curious, because I know you really engage in video and in that information landscape.
Yeah.
As to how you kind of take that into account when you're producing your material, writing it and distributing it.
You know, in terms of, that's something we think about all the time, both with the Sustainable Region, with the show that I work on, and with the Sapphire stuff. And it manifests in just like a certain rigorousness that the group has to undertake when it comes to choosing your shots, and when it comes to writing your scripts, and deciding that, you know, you're going to do the work that the mass media has not for so long. They just go to what is tantalizing, scintillating, as immediately gratifying as possible, so that, you know, for the most part, it is just fluff and it's pablum that's out there that, you know, that people are most immediately have access to. So in my work, it means you have to ask a lot of questions of yourself and of why you're doing what you're doing, and I feel like I've been able to do that throughout my career. I really hope that I continue to be able to do that. And to ask questions of arbitrariness and say, like, is this even necessary? Like, what you're saying is, are we contributing to a sense of helplessness? Now, in terms of journalism and rigor, I think it's really important. It's unfortunate. It's a difficult job. But to continue to go to those troubling topics that perhaps might be overwhelming, but that's not the stuff that I'm really concerned with audiences. If people get fatigued of that stuff, then they do, but that we have access to it is so important. It's so essential to our democracy.
Well, and I think the fact that you you use humor and satire, and there's a fun element to your videos. I imagine that is part of your strategy to not just sort of bombard people with sort of depressing...
Oh, sure. Absolutely. We use humor as a way of... Well, for one thing, we use humor because otherwise we would get very despondent. You know, if you're constantly looking at this stuff, it can be... It can make one disillusioned, and it can be very tiring. So we use humor not only to bring some lightness and some laughter to our audiences, but for ourselves, for our own sanity. I often find myself watching the news or listening to The House or listening to a program on co-op and then calling up one either Kai or Heather and saying, guys, like, we gotta do something. I'm gonna go crazy. I'm gonna go crazy if we don't do something about this. And just for the sake of our three minds, to make something silly about the bizarre insanity, which is the federal government right now.
So, in some ways, the way that you manage feeling overwhelmed by information or what's going on in the world is to do something. So that's where the sort of activism piece. So like you're acting on the world, you're doing something, you're engaging in this landscape in the process, in a fun product kind of way, helps you feel less overwhelmed by the information.
And it helps in terms of, it's always, video making since I was a kid has always been a strategy of empowerment. And it continues to be. It stops that sense for a minute, for, you know, a minute and 40 seconds when you're watching it online, or for the days leading up during production and editing. It stops that sense that you are being acted upon. I am acting instead. Like, I like what you were saying there. I'm choosing to take action.
In your day-to-day life, listening to the radio or reading social media, reading newspapers, or dealing with the information that comes to you, do you have other tools and techniques or ways that you use to try to prevent yourself from the impacts of information overload, from that anxiety, from that overwhelm, from that sort of stress? What other techniques and tools do you use?
Well, I try to be really aware of when I'm in front of the screen and when I'm not. And when I'm not working, I want to be not working. I don't want to be checking my email constantly or my phone. I want it to be away from me. I want to be able to hear the world around me. And I like to make things with my hands. I really like to craft and to draw and to cook and to be with my dogs and stuff. So to be very honest, I'm just trying to get away from the screens because we're so surrounded by them. We're so surrounded by the cameras that they come with. And so the self-surveillance that comes with that, and all the weird things, the ramifications of that. So my own strategy in my day-to-day life to deal with the overabundance of information is just to step away and to go for a walk outside, sit in the field, knit a toque. It sounds very cliche, but I basically try to come back to my body. You know, and sit and be aware of my surroundings in whatever way I can.
Mm-hmm. Because those screens, they sort of take you up in your head in kind of a way. Away from...
I feel like this may sound weird, but I feel like there's almost an electromagnetic feeling you can get when you're away from a screen for a very long time, and then you sit in front of one, and then everything sort of draws to the front. And I can almost feel my eyes flattening sometimes when I sit in front of the screen after I've taken a lovely break from one. Mm-hmm. So I just like to try and be mindful of that stuff when I can, when possible.
That was Caitlin Dodd. She's a local videographer here in Vancouver, and she creates videos that work to educate, challenge, and engage people on a wide range of social issues. As technology continues to be developed and marketed, the amount of information we encounter on a daily basis seems as though it's only going to increase. Managing this information and the experience of information overload will be a growing challenge.
As social justice activists, we need to continue to ask ourselves strategic questions about how to be effective in this busy information landscape, and how we ourselves can stay healthy and engaged in the long run.